Center right here on AM 580, of course, with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. And let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Glad to see you here on Columbus Day. You know what I'm saying? Indigenous Peoples Day.
That's right. I forgot it was that day today. I should have known. One of the kids asked me this weekend, is it Pilgrim's Day?
Well, you know, Indigenous Peoples Day is, you know, the new politically correct term. But honestly, we've talked about this a lot, about how Indigenous Peoples, I mean, they had it going on. I mean, that was back when things were really healthy-wise, you know, as far as eating and getting all the right nutrients and all that kind of stuff. Nowadays, it's kind of not so much. But hey, we got a special guest on the program. Of course, Morley Robbins back with us. He's going to be talking a lot about this and things that affect your health. And so, again, along the way, if you have any questions, you feel free to either call in or text into the show, 806-745-5800.
Yes, sir. Morley Robbins is back with us again, show number 5. And I've had some rumblings the past week. A few folks around town have been asking me, okay, well, tell me some practical stuff. You know, how do we implement these things to get our minerals back? So for new listeners that haven't joined us the past few weeks, Morley Robbins is initially known as a magnesium man, but over the past 10 years as he researched the importance of magnesium in the body, he got to see how there's some other minerals that were in play, specifically too much iron in the tissues. Maybe not too much in the blood, but in the tissue, in our cells, iron drives a lot of this inflammation. So I'd encourage listeners to go back and review the last 4 shows. Can learn more about that. But today, maybe we'll get into some more of the practical steps of you know, like, okay, what do we do? How do we get the magnesium? How do we get bioavailable copper? How do we get the iron out? So we'll get into that later in the show, but I wanted to run through a few more examples, try to connect the dots with these quote-unquote diseases, which, again, to remind people, most of these Western diseases are just that, Western diseases of the past 75 years. There was very little autoimmune and cancer and heart disease and heart attack and stroke and all these things. The top killers now in America, Alzheimer's, all the different neurodegenerative diseases. These are modern diseases, the past 75 years in particular, skyrocketing over the past 30 years for sure. So we've got to hone in on what is it we're doing here in America that's causing this epidemic, and we've already talked about it in past shows. It's the diet and lifestyle. The research even shows this. So part of this diet and lifestyle is obviously lack of minerals. When there's no minerals in the food, no vitamins in the food. I was reading a book this week in the longevity plan. Dr. Day from New York, cardiologist, was sick with your standard American diseases of reflux and hypertension and high cholesterol and arthritis, and was in his mid-40s, barely could get through his day. He set out on a journey to learn about healthy people, so he went to a village in China where 1 out of 100 people are over 100 years old, and they're still working out in the field, and they're happy, and their brain is fully functional. They're not demented. They're not arthritic. There's no heart attack or strokes or cancer. And what Dr. Day did, interestingly enough, was draw blood on these centurions and was able to analyze their genetics. And what he found was, wow, they do have the genes that put you at risk for cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, hypertension. They had all these genes, but they didn't have the diseases. So again, it just reinforced the notion that it's the environment, it's the diet and lifestyle that turns these genes on or keeps them turned off. But a big thing that hit me in that book is nutrition. These people go out and pick. What they pick in the morning is what they eat at lunch. What they pick in the field or in the forest in the afternoon is what they eat for dinner. And he made a comment in there that a green bean, once you pick a green bean off the vine, 7 days later, 77% of that vitamin C is no longer in the green bean. So, and that's even if it had it to begin with. USDA has published a number of studies that show, I think the last study I read, 48 different fruit and vegetables had anywhere from 10 to 50% less vitamins. Vitamin A, vitamin C, all the different vitamins, because of soil mismanagement or modern farming techniques. So the food doesn't have the minerals and vitamins to begin with because of the way we grow and the way we've damaged the soil. But then when you pick it and sit it on a shelf for a day, all those vitamins, or not all of them, but the majority of the vitamin depletes out of it. So that when we talk about diet and lifestyle, I mean, this is part of what we're talking about. We've changed our modern farming and food processing and food consumption habits, and it's resulted in nutrient deficient food. And the book Longevity Plan just points that out, partly points that out. There are other things to these centurions' lifestyle that makes them live healthy lifespans that are over 100 years. But anyways, so part of what we'll get into later in the show when we start talking about the root cause protocol, really it's just we're trying to supplement the food that's deficient. We need minerals, we need vitamins, let's get them in a whole food form if possible, and if not, let's supplement to the highest quality form that we can. But before we get into those details, I do want to connect a few dots. And Morley, I wanted to start with obesity because it's kind of rampant. I mean, overweight/obesity, it's like 70% of the population. And the way I used to describe it to patients and still do is because people are stuck in the calorie in, calorie out mindset. And I got to go burn more out than I put in. And that notion's been well debunked. Would highly recommend Gary Taub's book, Good Calorie, Bad Calorie, or his other book, Why We Get Fat. And it'll show you clearly through scientific literature and common sense that calories in, calories out is not an accurate way to think about weight gain. So I teach my patients that weight gain is more of a hormone issue. There's fat storage hormones. Number one is insulin. When you eat things that turn into sugar that spike your blood sugar, which is grains and, of course, sugar, high fructose corn syrup in particular, then you spike insulin. Insulin tells you to store fat, so you do. A second fat storage hormone is estrogen. That's why women tend to carry more weight. They need to have a little extra fat on them in case they get pregnant and need to grow that baby. But estrogen will tell you to store fat. Fat cells produce a type of estrogen called estrone. There's three types of estrogen, and estrone is one of them. Fat cells make it. So once you have fat cells, you start secreting more estrogen and it tells you to store some more fat. It's kind of a vicious cycle. And then the third thing I would tell folks, and this was kind of just used to be just kind of a wastebasket term of growth factors from inflammation. And basically I would just teach patients that when you're inflamed, when you're generally inflamed, these growth factors get produced by the inflammatory cascade and it causes you to gain weight. And I couldn't really connect those dots, you know, biochemically too well. But now that we're understanding what iron does in the body and iron driving inflammation and metabolic dysfunction, that growth factor category of weight gain is huge and probably going to shift closer to number one to rival insulin. So that's kind of where I want to start today, Morley, because so many people battle weight and so many people are stuck in that calories in, calorie out mode. And even people that have been following us for a while understand low carb, kind of higher fat, moderate protein is kind of what we've been preaching to drop that insulin spike. But we need to really, I think, clarify and highlight the growth factors, the inflammation-based portion of obesity and how iron maybe impacts that. But and I kind of just jumped right in there to obesity. Any comments or just good morning, first of all? I'm sorry I kind of went on a rampage there. I just want to get started and jump into this.
I'm exhausted. I barely have enough energy now to say hi.
Well, go drink you some adrenal cocktail.
Yeah, really? Oh, my gosh. No, that's another banner intro to the topic. But let's break that down, the obesity issue. It's very, very important, as you highlight. But I think what happens is people get lost in the Western medicine idea of if I could just lose weight, I would feel better.
Right.
And that's the exact opposite of how the body works. As you just so aptly pointed out, when the body is not working right, when the body is out of balance, it stores fat.
Yep.
And excess fat is a sign of a body under stress. And it's a penetrating look into the obvious, but it's really important for people to step back and say, don't get preoccupied with the excess weight just yet. Let's accept the fact that we're under stress. And when we're under chronic stress, it means that the minerals that are supposed to be metabolizing the stress aren't working. And what's the master stress metabolizing mineral? It's called magnesium. And what causes magnesium to leave the body in a New York minute? Or I guess I should say a Dallas minute for those who live in Texas. They can relate more to Dallas than they can to New York. But it's iron. Iron eats magnesium for lunch. So why is that important to what you've just said? Well, the very process of inflammation that you were referring to, again, I think it was Barry Sears who got everyone smart about fat and inflammation, and he would refer to people who are overweight are balls of fire. There's a lot of inflammation behind that excess weight. And so what is inflammation? It's a sign of excess unbound iron. And it was the research team out of Japan, Nagamura, in 2015, made it very clear that the free iron, the excess iron, the unbound iron inside the cell triggers a key protein called the danger sensor of the cell. And that protein has the initials NLRP3, and that's where inflammation starts. That protein is also called the inflammasome. That's the very genetic origin of inflammation. And what triggers that is a lack of magnesium and an excess of iron. That's the very basis of this crisis. So then what does that have to do with this estrogen thing you're talking about? Estrogen instructs the body to store the fat. Well, estrogen shows up in a body that's out of balance, especially when it doesn't have a key enzyme called ferrooxidase, which we've talked about probably too many times, but it's a really important enzyme that regulates the status of iron in the body. And if there is, that ferrooxidase is known as the master antioxidant enzyme. And everyone knows that, oh, vitamin C is an antioxidant and vitamin E is an antioxidant. And those are the antioxidant vitamins that we've been taught about. But they never told us about the antioxidant enzymes that are the powerhouse mechanisms for stopping the process of oxidation. And what is oxidation? It's rust. We know what a rusty nail looks like, or a rusty pipe, or a rusty car. Well, that's oxidation. It's also called oxidative stress. And ferrooxidase is the master enzyme to stop that. And when the body does not have enough of that ferrooxidase enzyme to battle the pro-oxidant impact of iron, what does it do? The fallback position is use the backup antioxidant in the body. It's called estrogen. And that's a really important thing to understand, that if estrogen is rising, it means that ferrooxidase is missing. It also means that progesterone is missing. Why is that important? Because progesterone is made with magnesium. The enzyme that regulates the production of progesterone is magnesium dependent. Well, that's an important thing to know. So that if progesterone and estrogen are out of balance, as they are in most people's body, you're going to, as you were saying, divert into the estrogen dominant state, store fat, and it's all because there's too much iron and not enough magnesium. But then there's a third component of this. There's a very important research that's being done by an iron researcher out of Vanderbilt University, and her name is Marla Hubler, H-U-B-L-E-R, and this is an article that she wrote in February of 2015, and it's called Iron Homeostasis, A New Job for Macrophages in Adipose Tissue. So that's a lot of big words. But the important thing about it is, again, the phrase iron homeostasis doesn't just mean how much ferritin do I have. That's first grade math. what iron homeostasis is like is algebra, which is high school math. And I think just about everyone has had the opportunity to be exposed to algebra, maybe some too much, like myself. I always struggled with algebra. But the point is, the mechanism of iron homeostasis involves a balance between iron in the blood, iron in the tissue, and the enzyme that shuttles iron between blood and tissue and back, and that's called ferrooxidase. And what Merle Huber has discovered is that when the macrophages, those are the Pac-Men inside the body that gobble up pathogens, dead tissue, and dying red blood cells. And why is that important to know? Because dying red blood cells are full of iron because they're full of hemoglobin, which is full of iron at the center of each of the four heme groups in each hemoglobin molecule. So when the iron starts to build in the Pac-Man but can't get out, it changes the natural physiological function of the cell, and it can't burn that fat cell. It's stuck in iron overload state. And again, goes back to our discussion, I think it was last week, where we were talking about M1 versus M2. What is M1? M1 is inflammation. What is M2? That's tissue repair. That's the physiological completion of the cycle. Well, when you have iron stuck in your cells, you're in a perpetual state of M1, perpetual state of inflammation. And what do you have? You got to have iron in order to have M1 state. But what do you have to do in order to have M2? You've got to let go of the iron, and the doorman inside the macrophage to allow that to happen is called ferrooxidase. Ding, 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 back to the same mechanism. So if you can't get rid of the iron, you can't get rid of the fat. And then, final comment, because I know I'm throwing a lot of spaghetti up on the wall, the final comment is the physiological process to burn fat is called beta oxidation. Beta oxidation enzymes are what enable us to burn fat. And fat is a very important source of fuel because you can make 140 units of ATP for each unit of fat versus 32 units of fuel if you're burning one unit of glucose. So the beauty of fat is it's incredibly efficient as a source of fuel, but it also conserves oxygen. And so there's less chances for oxidation when you can use that oxygen more efficiently to burn fat. And what do you need in order to do that? You have to have bioavailable copper. Where is that found? It's found in that thing called ferrooxidase. So back to this seesaw between bioavailable copper and iron. And so when someone has excess weight, when they are considered obese, when they're considered a ball of fire, well, then we know what the underlying mineral mechanism is. There's not enough magnesium. There's not enough bioavailable copper. And there's too much iron. And so we're back to the same three players out of balance with each other as we've been discussing in each of the conditions that we've been talking about. And so that mechanism of the inability to burn that fat is an important sign that the body is out of balance in terms of its key minerals.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yes, mostly. You lost me somewhere in there because I'm trying to think how to explain this in layman's terms. When the macrophage, the Pac-Man, is full of iron from gobbling up all the red blood cells and whatnot, can't get rid of the iron because it doesn't have the enzyme to move it out, how does that translate to the adipose cell?
The cell needs to use macrophage to gobble up the fat.
Okay, gotcha.
It plays a really critical function in fat metabolism.
Okay.
And if the macrophage is stuck in inflammation mode, it can't get to the proper state of burning up the fat.
Gotcha. Okay, so the Pac-Man are needed to help gobble up the fat. But when they're stuck in inflammation mode because of too much iron, they can't do it. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so again, just to reinforce it for folks, one atom of iron has four unpaired electrons. And Mother Nature doesn't like anything that's unpaired. But iron is unique in its structure because it has four unpaired electrons. That means it likes to steal electrons to get back to homeostasis. So that means it's going to rob from somebody. Mm-hmm. Well, what creates these iron-laden or iron-heavy macrophages is a substance called hemosiderin. And hemosiderin has a lot of iron in it, and they estimate that it has as much as 100,000 unpaired electrons. Well, that is like a nuclear reactor for chaos. Again, people have to understand that it's like a magnet that has a very deranged form of magnetism, and it creates a lot of chaotic signaling in the tissue.
Yeah. Okay. And just to remind everybody, we're all full of iron, a large part, because the iron fortified food, 1940s, they started adding iron to the grains in particular, the flour. Everyone's eating cereal and bread and crackers and pastries and spaghetti and, bagels, you name it. And so iron gets built up over time, over these generations since World War II. And if you're not regularly donating blood, which I highly recommend, then there's nowhere for the iron to go. It has a hard time leaving the body, or it can't really leave the body. And then the body can try to keep it in balance, move it around from blood to tissue and back and forth and keep it dancing. But, again, magnesium and copper are needed for that. And when you're under stress, your mag and copper aren't available. So it's just a vicious cycle, just as a reminder. So that's great. That's a good explanation. We've had lots of patients who just focus on that first hormone that I described at the top of the show, insulin, because insulin tells you to store fat, so you just quit eating grain and sugar. So people eat paleo or ketogenic, low carb, whatever. They drop that insulin spike, and they'll get a 30-pound weight loss or 40 or 60 or whatever just from that. But when you think about that, when you're eating paleo, you're dropping the grains. Your corn, wheat, and rice, that rich flour, and all that extra iron is going away also. So it's a kind of a 1-2 punch there. But then I've had other patients who will plateau. They'll lose that first 20. They need to lose 60, and they kind of get stuck there. And then the rare patient won't lose any. They need to lose 100, and they quit eating grain and sugar. Maybe they'll lose 5 pounds, and they'll get kind of stuck there. So having this deeper understanding of this inflammatory-based adipose tissue is essential for these kind of what I would call non-responder patients who don't just respond to a diet change or respond partially to a diet change. So very encouraging for the patients out there or the listeners who have gotten, who have not gotten the results that they expected. So thank you for that explanation.
Yeah, and with the folks that I work with, I encourage them to put the focus on the weight. It should be the last thing they worry about.
Right.
What I'm really focusing on at the front end is, let's get these minerals in balance. Let's get this iron recycling program back into function again.
Yeah.
And let's make sure that the body is enabling some kind of natural rhythm. And then as the body regains its mojo, it will let go of the excess weight because it knows it's safe to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Angie, who does our new patient orientation, she tells me regularly, over half the people, maybe 75% of the people that come here, the number one thing they want to talk about is their weight.
Right.
It's so hard to shift that mindset, which is why I'm publishing the article, A Clinic That Doesn't Treat Disease, because I want to shift to what you just said. Don't focus on the weight. But in fact, don't focus on any of your diseases. Let's just focus on putting balance to the body, and particularly the minerals and lack of peace. And all this stuff will kind of work itself out, including the weight loss. So that's good.
And to your point, just a few minutes ago about the calories in, calories out, absolutely in complete agreement with you. And again, Gary Tobbs is one of my favorite writers as well. The importance of that, though, is that most people don't know who Gary Tobbs is. Yeah. Most people don't know that calories in, calories out is a joke. And what's the first thing people do when they're overweight? They stop eating. Mm-hmm. And the greatest stress that you can put on the human body is deny it calories. Mm. And it's very counterintuitive. You think, well, I weigh too much, therefore I need to cut back. There are compelling studies done where there was one study in particular in a prison where they gave inmates who were healthy 6,000 calories. I think Gary Tobbs even talks about this. 6,000 calories, they didn't get an ounce. So that's where this whole idea of calories in, calories out doesn't make any sense. But the minute you take someone who should be burning 2,000 calories and take them down to 1,000 calories, if it's not being managed properly, that will create so much stress, and then what's the body going to do? It's going to store more fat. Mm-hmm. It's the absolute exact opposite of what people would expect.
Yeah, it'll shut the metabolism down. The metabolism that was burning 2,000 calories a day, it'll shut down to 800 calories a day when it's under stress like that. And we've talked about that. Calorie restriction, no good, versus like an occasional fast, intermittent fasting. There's some beneficial components to that, but a chronic calorie restriction every day, not good at all.
That's exactly right. And it's just, again, it's rewiring the thinking of the populace. I mean, we were all subject to that thinking for decades.
Yeah.
But I learned, my biggest breakthrough was with Dr. Atkins, who, what's really funny, he was vilified by the AMA for his protocol. And then when he's the only physician I know of that had to testify before Congress to defend his license. Only physician on the planet that had to do so. And he said, I don't understand what this controversy is about. I learned about this program that I use from an article I read in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Yeah.
It's just amazing how things evolve in terms of our thought process.
Well, we'll come back after the break. It's already been half the show gone. It's hard to believe. We're too long-winded, Morley. But we got to take a break. We'll be right back and maybe get into some of the actual protocols. So stay with us.
Welcome back in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, brought to you by VeritasMedical.com. Check out the website, VeritasMedical.com. Of course, Morley Robbins, our special guest here on the telephone with us this morning. And we'll get right back into it, Dr. Edwards.
Yeah, I think we need to go ahead, Morley, and jump into some solutions. We've been talking for four and a half shows now about the problem. And we've sprinkled in some solutions here and there. But I think listeners would really appreciate some practical steps on how to get rid of the iron, how to get your magnesium up, how to get your bioavailable copper up, how to get the ferrooxidase. I'm so proud. I'm sure our listeners actually know what that is now. We've said it so many times, but the enzyme that actually allows the iron to move back and forth and get it out of the Pac-Man macrophage, get it out of the different places where it's causing disruption, that's ferrooxidase. That's the enzyme that moves it around, that teeter-totter seesaw we've talked about. That helps keep your iron in balance. So how do you get your ferrooxidase enzyme functional and doing its job again? So Morley, over the years, in his quest to figure all this out, started just writing down certain things that will help, really, these primary things: get magnesium up, get copper available for the ferrooxidase enzyme to be able to utilize properly, and get the iron down. So when you go on Morley's website, gotmag.org, or just Google the root cause protocol and Morley Robbins, you'll see these basically 11 different steps to stop doing, and then 10 or 11 steps to start doing. And these may change over time. There may be a 12th step here or there. And we could probably spend 5 hours going over the entire stops and starts. But before we get into it, I want to remind listeners that most patients in America, most people in America, are so used to the doctor having the answer. I've got a headache, I've got high blood pressure, I've got diabetes, I've got whatever, autoimmune disease. Doc, give me the answer. Write a prescription or even give me a supplement. Give me a pill in a bottle to fix this. And you can't. I mean, we can't. That's not how it works. the body's got to fix itself. The doctor really doesn't have the answer. So if you're in the mindset of, hey, give me these supplements in a bottle to fix me, it's not going to work. I mean, you might get some improvement, but it's diet and lifestyle. So therefore, a doctor can never fix your diet and lifestyle. You've got to do it yourself. Now, a doctor can teach and educate, which is what a doctor should be doing. That's a root, Latin root of physician is teacher. We need to be teaching you all the whys behind this stuff so that you can go out there and get motivated to make these diet and lifestyle changes. So a big part of this protocol, really, if you look at it big picture, is focused on the diet portion. And what's lacking in our diet. Obviously, you need to change your food habits, but then the minerals that are lacking even in good, healthy, organic food, you've got to supplement. You either be deficient or you supplement. If the food doesn't have it, you've got to supplement, just like these ranchers that supplement their cows with mineral blocks because the grass is deficient. So ideally, our food would be full of all the minerals, all the vitamins, and we'd walk outside and pick it right off the vine and eat it the same day. But until we get to that point, we're going to have to supplement or be deficient. So keep that in mind as we talk about this protocol and these different supplements to take. They're whole food based. We'd rather you get it in the food if possible. And they each have a purpose of bringing minerals and vitamins in that play specific roles to help magnesium, help copper, and iron dysregulation. But I think we got a text. Did we?
Yeah, we'll go to the text line. And this is an interesting question because I kind of have the same situation about donating blood. Now, I can't donate blood because of all the shots and things I had with the United States Army, like smallpox and anthrax and things like that. So donation centers will definitely not want me to donate blood for that reason. But this texter called in and says, is there any advice for someone who has trouble donating blood? I did when I was younger, and I passed out, so I get so nervous about it donating that when I try, my heart rate's over 100, and they won't let me. Mm-hmm. Does Veritas do this at their clinic, or do we have to go to a donation center?
Yes, we do it at our clinic. They're called therapeutic phlebotomies. If people need to just get rid of some blood because of excess iron or otherwise, they're called therapeutic phlebotomies. You could talk to your doctor about it. If he's not educated in what we've been talking about the past five shows, he may not quite understand, or he may check one certain blood test, and if you don't fall in the range that he thinks you need the therapeutic phlebotomy, he may not write an order for it.
So I could get that.
You have to have a doctor's order for it. But Veritas Lab does that. And then otherwise try to donate. In this particular case, kind of nervous, jittery, or just having a sort of mental, emotional reaction, there may be some relaxation techniques that she needs or he needs to try to implement to be able to donate the blood. If there was no other medical or, like with you, you have all the shots. The blood service place has a questionnaire, and there's 20 or 30 different reasons you'll be disqualified for donating. I don't remember all those off the top of my head, but if you have one of those, then you need to get a doctor's order for therapeutic phlebotomy. For this folks, or this lady that texted in, I would say try some relaxation techniques. The blood bank needs your blood, so if you're able to donate, you should. They just called me Friday and asked me to come back in and donate. I donated 2 months ago, and they have me on the list. I know they're here in Lubbock, they're 100 bags short or 100 units short as of Friday. So I'd encourage you to find a way to donate, do some relaxation techniques.
But if I can't, like in my case,
doctor's order for a therapeutic phlebotomy.
I would just donate. What do you do with my blood? Just
medical waste? Therapeutic phlebotomy, blood is medical waste. Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, good question.
Studies consistently show people that donate regularly, which is only about 5% of any given community's population, have a longer health span, a better quality of life, less disease, less inflammation. They live longer.
Wow. So again, I wish I could donate, but thanks to the United States Army and smallpox, not so much, and anthrax.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Now, yeah, me too.
I had a question that got texted in, Morley. We may just start here.
Sure.
Or we can start wherever you want. But obviously magnesium, we've kind of hammered that home. Everyone's low in magnesium because of stress. We're all in a stressful lifestyle, and then our iron overload is a stress, and that pushes mag out of the body. So everyone's just bleeding magnesium out. And our food's depleted, so it's hard to eat enough, but I encourage everybody to eat vegetables, especially the green leafies, and get your magnesium through food. But I'm going to assume that our food consumption does not match our magnesium burn rate, the how much mag we're dumping out of our body every day. So we supplement.
That's right.
We need to supplement with a quality magnesium supplement. There's various ones on the market, but the question that I had texted in was, does it matter when? When's the best time to take magnesium, in particular if you're taking other medication, like thyroid medication? Does it interact with other meds? Does it matter if it's during the day, during the night? So let's just start with magnesium first, and then we can go wherever you want with the protocol.
Absolutely. So one quick observation, then I'll get to this magnesium question. What I think the listeners need to start thinking about is that Veritas Medical is the mineral block for the Lubbock region, and maybe even for the state of Texas. And I think that's an important idea, that in this era of low minerals in our food, you are really coming up a learning curve and mastering this process. You are the mineral block. I think that's important for people to understand. So as it comes to magnesium, I always find it entertaining when people are struggling with when to take their supplements so it doesn't interfere with their thyroid medication. Like, they got it backwards. Wait a minute. Why are you taking thyroid medication? Because you're magnesium deficient.
Yeah.
And so I respect that. I honor that people have gotten into a routine. So most people do their thyroid medication, you know, very first thing they wake up, you know. And then 2 hours later, you can start working with magnesium. The real focal point of when to take magnesium is when you're going to remember to take it.
Yep.
I always take the bulk of my supplements right after breakfast, because that's when I remember to do it. If I get into a routine and try to remember in the afternoon, it doesn't happen. Or at night, it doesn't happen. I don't know. It's just the way I'm wired. But I think magnesium, if you're not using a form that doesn't have slow-release function, or it's not timed, you need to break it up into a couple parts of the day. What I like about the form that comes from like Jigsaw is I take that in the beginning of the day, and I don't have to worry about it for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. Again, what the listeners have to understand is I'm an incredibly lazy person. And even though I work tirelessly to figure out all these mineral relationships, I'm really lazy when it comes to these kinds of daily routines. And I found that to be a particularly beneficial form because it works and I don't have to think about it the rest of the day. I think there are many of the folks that I work with find that they take magnesium at least twice a day, usually at the start of the day, and then very often at some point in the evening, because it helps them relax so they can have a better night's sleep.
Right.
So those, I think, are two really good times to do it. The issue with people who have problems restoring magnesium, invariably it's back to this iron thing again. If there's too much iron in the system, it's going to resist the influx of magnesium. And there are three cofactors that we routinely talk about for helping to get magnesium into the cell. They are bicarbonate, boron, and B6, the three Bs that help get magnesium into the cell. I think it was like 5 years before I finally figured out what were those three doing. All three of them blunt the effect of too much iron in the cell, and then that allows magnesium to get in. And that's a really big deal, because if you can't get magnesium into the cell, which is where 99% of the magnesium needs to be, it needs to be inside the cell, not in the fluid outside the cell, that's where it works its magic. And it really is magic when you begin to understand the breadth and depth of what it does inside the body. But it's very important for people to work with those cofactors, the bicarbonate, the B6, and the boron. And as it relates to the you were alluding to the stops and the starts, what in terms of stops, there's a lot of benefit by just doing the stops. As you mentioned, there are 11 stops. Well, at the top of that list is to stop taking vitamin D. And I know that sounds heretical for a lot of people who think that that's the most important nutrient. Well, the people who told us that we had high cholesterol are now telling us we have low vitamin D. Well, you make vitamin D from cholesterol. So right away, people have to start connecting those dots and say, wait a minute, how could they have been telling us about cholesterol? And it turns out they were wrong. Well, then maybe they're wrong about vitamin D, too. And what does vitamin D do? Vitamin D supplements are the wrong form of vitamin D to begin with. It's a fat-soluble form. The body prefers water-soluble. How does the body make water-soluble? It takes cholesterol that it makes and it's found in the diet. It takes sunshine and magnesium, and it creates a water-soluble form. Very different animal inside the body. That's the preferred form of vitamin D. And so you got to stop that, because taking the supplement puts a drain on magnesium, causes us to lose potassium, which is a very bad thing for the cell, because when you're low potassium, you're going to take on more iron. That sink in. When you take vitamin D, you're going to increase the absorption and the storage of iron. That's the antithesis of what we're trying to do here. And a lot of people think that they are supposed to take vitamin D to stop inflammation or to correct inflammation. And what the leading research now indicates, and the best article there is by Mangan, 2014, it turns out that vitamin D is just a signpost of inflammation. It has no ability to stop it or correct it. It's just an indication that when the vitamin D status of the storage form called calcidiol, when that starts to get lower and lower, that's an indication of inflammation. And then we have to back up and say, okay, why does that happen? It happens when there's not enough magnesium and there's too much iron. It stops that enzyme to make calcidiol. And what are the minerals that cause inflammation? Too little magnesium, too much iron. We're back to the same minerals causing the same mechanism in low vitamin D when we were talking about obesity. And again, what's obesity? It's a sign of inflammation. Yeah. So again, stop the vitamin D. And then there's a holy trinity of supplements that people think they should be taking: calcium, zinc, and iron. And they're very popular in Western medicine. They are, I call them the holy trinity of Western medicine. And if my livelihood and my income stream was based on disease, I would be pushing calcium, iron, and zinc. Let that sink in, folks. Those are the very minerals that shut down the metabolism of magnesium and the metabolism of bioavailable copper. Unfortunately, there are no accidents. And so the modern-day fields of nutrition and medicine have it backwards. And so you don't use vitamin D, and you don't use calcium supplements, iron supplements, and zinc, because they're going to completely destroy this process that we're talking about. And, of course, many of your listeners, I'm sure, have osteoporosis or osteopenia, or they're worried about those two conditions, thinking that it's a calcium issue. No, it's not a calcium issue. Osteopenia and osteoporosis are caused by osteoclasts that are designed to break down bone matrix, and they respond to a particular enzyme called acid phosphatase. And what's the key for acid phosphatase? It's called iron. So iron activates acid phosphatase, which then eats away at the bone matrix, which releases calcium, and that's what creates that low bone density, is a loss of calcium. But it's not a problem with calcium, it's a problem with iron. And what's the flip side of acid phosphatase? It's an enzyme called alkaline phosphatase. That's the medium that allows osteoblasts, the builders, to build up bone matrix. And what mineral activates alkaline phosphatase? It's called magnesium. So there we are, right back to the same two minerals duking it out. It's a constant dynamic between magnesium and iron, seeking to do what they do best, and it just depends on how stressed out the individual is. as to whether they have enough magnesium to keep the machinery and keep the magnesium-dependent enzymes running properly.
Yeah.
So it's just at the very basis to stop the confusion of some of the more conventional and popular supplements like vitamin D, calcium, iron, and zinc. Stop those. It has an enormous effect to allow the body to catch its breath and start to store the mineral that's really important, which is called magnesium, and make sure you've got the cofactors, the bicarbonate, the B6, and the boron, and it has a magical effect inside the body.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate to listeners, if you're in shock about calcium osteoporosis and everything he Morley just said, there's a great book, The Calcium Lie, by Thomas Levy, L-E-V-Y.
Robert Thompson.
Okay, I'm getting the titles mixed up. Calcium Lie is Robert Thompson, but then Thomas Levy, who's the vitamin C guy, The Calcium Myth or Calcium Deception, he wrote
Calcium it. Deception, I think it is. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And to remind the listeners, there's countries that don't even have a name osteoporosis in their language because they don't have, I mean, like those China, the village from the top of the show, I talked about the longevity plan, the book by Dr. Day. There's no osteoporosis in these centurions. And there's no lack of calcium in the body. There's plenty of calcium in our body. It's just not in the bone, as Morley so aptly just pointed out. The osteoclasts chew it up. The osteoblasts aren't there to build it anymore. And the countries that drink the most milk have the most hip fractures. So we've been so, it's just been so backwards with our thought, or so elementary in our thought process of, oh, everyone's breaking bones from thin bones, let's add calcium. But without a deeper knowledge of the biochemistry of what's going on and the inflammatory process that's going on, just throwing calcium at it doesn't work. Drinking milk all day doesn't work. And the studies show that. So
a great article. I know we're running out of time. Great article about this was by Guy Abraham, MD. He was an OBGYN, taught at UCLA Medical Center. He wrote a classic article called The Calcium Controversy. And Dr. Ben, I'll send you a copy of that because it might be something you want to either put in the show notes or certainly post on your Facebook page. But he breaks it down into some very basic misunderstandings about the dynamics between magnesium and calcium. What it doesn't talk about, though, is the iron that's hiding behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Abraham does a masterful job of explaining where the deception is in the calcium issue, and that might be a stimulus for people to read that and then get to the books that you're talking about, The Calcium Deception, The Calcium Lie. They're both wonderful books.
Yeah, agreed. I'll definitely look at that article. Thank you. We just have a few minutes left. I'm just going to read real fast for the benefit of the viewers who can't get on the website and look at the protocol. Obviously, we don't have time to go through each one in detail, but just to give people an idea on the stops, and Morley already mentioned, you stop vitamin D, you stop calcium supplements, you stop iron supplements, you stop ascorbic acid supplements, so that's the vitamin C. But we've talked about on previous shows, you need the whole food. You need the whole automobile, not just the outer covering. So stop ascorbic acid. That's just the outer covering of vitamin C. Stop high fructose corn syrup and all synthetic sugars. Stop low-fat diet. Stop using industrialized, quote-unquote, heart-healthy omega-6 oils, which are your soybean, corn, canola. Stop using fluoride in your toothpaste, etc. Stop your generic old drugstore multivitamins and prenatals. Stop using citrate in foods and supplements, i.e. natural calm magnesium citrate, and stop using colloidal silver. Those are the stops, just to give you an idea. And like Morley said, you can get a whole lot accomplished just by doing that, just by stopping some stuff. When you eat more of an ancestral type of diet instead of a low-fat diet, that's huge. You'll drop the iron consumption just by doing that. You'll stop the insulin spike and all the things we talked about earlier. On the starts, start magnesium. Start cod liver oil. Start whole food vitamin C. Start an adrenal cocktail, which we'll have to talk about that again in another show. But basically, that's salt with some potassium. And with a little whole food vitamin C all mixed together and you drink it. We're all salt deficient. Real salt, not table salt, but sea salt or real salt from Utah. You want all the trace minerals. Start using B vitamins. Morley just mentioned the cofactors to get your magnesium into the cell. You need boron. You need B vitamins. The B vitamins that are found in nature, bee pollen, rice bran, beef liver, those are good sources of bees, but also good sources of whole food copper, bioavailable copper. Start using diatomaceous earth, which is a form of silica. We need silica to help the ceruloplasma or ferrooxidase enzyme. The boron we mentioned, start taurine, start ancestral diet, and start iodine. So that was a quick run through. I know there's going to be a ton of questions about all these different things on when and how much and why do I need that? But I want to give people, that's an overview, a big overview of what we're talking about here. And in future shows, we'll kind of go through one by one because I want people to know the why behind it. You know, if you just go and buy all this stuff and fill your pill pack full of it, you're going to think, man, I'm taking as many pills as I was on my pharmaceuticals or more. And again, like I already mentioned, if our food had it, I had a patient text me a picture of his and he's a young man, he's probably 28 years old, a picture of his pill pack for the week. And all these supplements in it. And I'm going to text him back, well, you're a farmer, because he is. Why don't you start growing food that has all this in it and deliver it to me. Deliver it to me every day or week, at three times a week. Drop it off a box full of vine-ripe and fresh-picked. I mean, I'd pay good money for that, and I've got 2,000 patients who would too. So you farmers out there, listen up. Start growing food that has this in it, and we'll get it that way. But just really, I want people to remember that if your food doesn't have it, and I even try my best to eat ancestral and healthy and as much vine ripened as possible, and I still know I'm not getting it. My body is depleted. I'm under stress, although I try not to be. I know I'm not getting it in the food, so I'm going to supplement. But again, we'll have to go through these in detail later, Morley, on future shows. So I hope you can join us again down the road.
I look forward to it. And again, I'm going to refine what I said a minute ago. This is the tagline that I think Veritas Medical needs to play around with. Veritas Medical, the healthy person's mineral block, and the word block is a double entendre. The block implies obviously the farmer's use of the mineral block to get them the good minerals, but what you're also doing is you're blocking the impact of iron in the body.
Right.
So I just think, well, I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk about that, but that's just my idle mind at work as you're sharing those insights.
I like that.
Thanks for doing that.
Good little motto. Thank you, Morley. Well, thanks for all you've done and all the research you've poured through and pieced it all together and presented in such a great way for the benefit of all the listeners, all our patients. So thank you very much and look forward to talking to you more.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Morley, hold on. We'll I'm going to need to ask you a question offline, so don't go away.
Sure.
But
okay.
Dr. Edwards, thanks again for the great show. Appreciate you being here again. Once again, you're the cure. We'll see you back here next week on the program.
Sounds good. Thank you, Wade.
All right, stick around. We've got Unconfused coming up next.